Welcome to the Angus Table, the podcast from Angus Australia. I'm Scott Wright, the CEO at Angus Australia. Each episode will bring conversations with breeders, industry leaders, innovators, insights, stories and ideas that matter and hopefully add value to your Angus operation. Whether it's genetics, markets, pasture management, marketing experts or people shaping the breed, this is where the Angus community pulls up a chair at the Angus Table. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Angus Table this afternoon. We have indeed a very special guest on the Angus Table today, the Honourable Julie Collins, the Minister for Primary Industries. So welcome to the Angus podcast. Our listeners will be delighted to hear our chat this
Thanks,
afternoon.
Scott, but if you run through that title, we'll be here all day. So Julie or Jules is fine.
That's excellent. And for our listeners, it's the most important cabinet position. And it's at times a pretty tricky one too.
Yeah, it's a great job and I certainly enjoy it. And the farmers have been really generous with me since I've been in the role. And certainly I love going out on farm and chatting to farmers about, you know, what's real for them and what's going on for them. And it's interesting to get their feedback on the ground. So obviously I speak regularly with all the peaks and the industry groups, but it always is great to get actually out on farm and talk to farmers. It's my favourite bit of the job.
The best role in cabinet for seeing the length and breadth of Australia.
Absolutely, I guess. Indeed. Yeah, I get to get out and about a lot. Every week I'm on the road somewhere. Some weeks, sadly, it's just to Parliament House in Canberra, although I love Canberra, but I'd rather be out and about in regional communities, in farming communities across the country.
And Julie, what's your home electorate? You might just tell our listeners a little bit about that.
My electorate's the most southern electorate in the country. So I have a range of agriculture and aquaculture and forestry in my electorate, all of the above really, but I have some great berries, some great stone fruit. I get some really great local ham from my electorate and we produce some really good product. Like most parts of Australia, you know, there's excellent product, excellent people doing great farming practices and I think we should be really proud of our primary producers and farmers.
And you're fortunate to live in a state which has the highest Angus percentage of the cattle population of any state in Australia.
I was fascinated when you told me that. We do have some beautiful cattle and, you know, driving through Tasmania and seeing, you know, that black cattle against the green grass is always quite magical.
And you live very close to where the first Angus cattle arrived in Australia in 1824 at the Hobart Docks and walked up to a local property and the breed has certainly flourished now to be 52% of the beef industry.
It's fantastic news for Tassie and for the country that our beef herd is going so well and indeed that Angus is going so well as part of that. And, you know, I could say that my home state has very similar climate to Scotland, where Angus is from, of course, but right across the country I think we do very well with our produce and our farmers. We should be so proud of.
Julie, what drew you to the agriculture portfolio? Has it always been an interest to you? Did that develop over time? Or did the Prime Minister look at you one day and say, you're the right person for the job? How did you arrive at this ministerial position?
Well, I had it for a little while in opposition and certainly I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I represented primary producers for over 18 years as part of my electorate. And Tassie, you know, is well known for its great agricultural product, as I was indicating before. So I think it's a bit of a natural fit to have a Tasmanian in the role, given, you know, how good we are at ag. But certainly it's been a real privilege and I often joke that my husband gives me a bit of extra credibility because I married somebody who came from, you know, Narrabri on a cotton farm and then moved to Queensland, calls himself a Queenslander and then grew up on a farm. So I get some unsolicited advice regularly from him.
That's great. Julie, often agriculture is a conservative landscape. How do you manage the role as from a Labor side of politics? Has it been easy to work with producers around Australia? Do you get a warm welcome? How does that work?
As I indicated before, they've been really generous. And certainly, you know, what I find is people are really generally very friendly, but they also want to share their story. You know, they're busy doing their day job, getting on with farming, producing great produce. But when I come along or I want to have a chat to them, they're always incredibly interested. And certainly, you know, talking to the industry peaks and the bodies, we have a great relationship, you know. Do we always agree on everything? Absolutely not, but I don't think they always agree with anybody and their job's to advocate for primary producers on the land and I'm a good listener and I respond to it. So we have a great relationship.
That's excellent. You've got some, on the Labor side of politics, you've got some great boots to fill in terms of John Kern was one of the great ministers in the agricultural space.
Yeah.
Do you feel sometimes you're walking in some legacy that's gone before?
Oh, I feel very proud of Labor's legacy in agriculture. You know, we're a government that actually supports farmers on the land and primary producers. You know, we now hold more regional seats than any other party in the parliament. We're certainly very proud of that. And I think that shows that we're in touch with what's happening out and about in our regional communities and our regional towns across the country. So the legacy of John Kerrin and other agriculture ministers that came before me is something I do think about, but I'm busy getting on with my day job. And I'm working with the industry about their priorities, really.
That's excellent. Now, you probably don't have an average day, but what does the average day look like for a minister in agriculture? It's a very diverse role, but walk us through it.
Well, they, you know, like a lot of people, particularly people who live on, you know, on the land, start early and finish late. Often the sun isn't up by the time I'm on the road and, you know, I'm often going home in the dark. They are long days, but they're really interesting days, and I feel like I'm making a difference, which I think you need to in jobs like mine. You need to be able to say this is actually making a difference, and you know, I'm here to make a difference, and that's what I'm working for every day that I'm here. But certainly, you know, on a sitting day, it's a bit different to a normal day. But I do spend a lot of early mornings and late nights on flights or in cars, getting to places at reasonable times and trying to pack as much in. But to give you an example today, you know, I was in the car at 7 here for meetings. You know, I think I had 6 meetings already today. I've got another 5 to go. I've done 2 speeches already. I've got another 1 to go. I've sat through question time. You know, it's very varied, but I also finished the day going to a barbecue with the organics primary producers. So, you know, there's also a bit of time to have a good chat with some of the farmers and primary producers, even though I'm in Parliament House. But out and about in my electorate or in electorates around the country, it can be really varied, you know, meeting with farmers, meeting with industry groups, talking to people about, you know, what's real for them and what they're dealing with. And certainly I think in the current issues around the Middle East and the conflict there, I'm also spending a lot of time in meetings. One of my meetings today is with industry, with over 50 representatives in industry, to get a handle on how things are going out and about and what decisions farmers are making right now today, given where we are globally with issues like fuel and fertiliser.
Over the next 2 years, Julie, what do you see as some of the major priorities that you and your role in government will be dealing with?
Well, one that's really topical, but we also made an election commitment on was a food security strategy. And I think, you know, post-COVID that really came into focus, and it was, you know, an election commitment that we made. We've already got the Food Council up and running. Earlier this week we had our second meeting already, and the council, I had a bit of a chat to them about the immediate focus, given what's occurring in the Middle East and given how that could impact on our food security. Going down the track, we don't know how long it's going to last for. So obviously we're dealing with the immediate challenges for our farmers and primary producers, but we're also thinking medium and long term. What does that look like? Trade and biosecurity are always really big priorities for us. We've invested more in biosecurity. We've been busy diversifying our trade opportunities, but certainly the immediate issues are dealing with the Middle East.
Obviously, diesel and urea, or nitrogen fertiliser, two big issues that have come to the fore more recently for a lot of producers, and certainly the beef sector is no exception. What's your thinking going forward, Julie? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so what we're trying to do at the moment and what we're working with the Petroleum Institute with states and territories is about making sure we can get that fuel, particularly diesel, out to the regions so that farmers can keep farming and fishers can keep fishing. And that's certainly been a priority of ours, and working through how we make sure that that occurs. What we've seen is some very large spikes in demand. We've obviously got fuel in Australia still arriving as it ordinarily would. And certainly, you know, in reality, we actually have more fuel in the system today than we had prior to the Middle East conflict breaking out. But what we've seen is a demand increase. So it's about how do we work with everybody along that supply chain to actually make sure that that's getting to where it needs to go in the immediate term, and then longer term, how do we plan that? And we've also, with fertiliser, we've been getting a handle on from the fertiliser companies and working with Fertiliser Australia. We've had quite a few meetings and discussions with government about where is the fertiliser. What is, you know, the future months, coming months look like? And certainly, you know, we've said in Parliament, and I've said repeatedly, you know, we've got some fertiliser here in the country, we've got some on the water, but, you know, we don't know what's coming down the track. So it's about making sure that we look at all the options to prepare for that, and certainly we've been doing that. We've obviously got the investment in the Perdaman plant that will produce urea from 2027 back commercially here on Australian shores, which is a great thing. We are dealing with the immediate situation as well.
Mm-hmm. And we've got, a sowing window that's coming fairly soon for southern cereals and forage crops. Yes. I imagine that's a big key priority for your department.
Yeah, we've had ABARES doing a bit of work on the seasons and where they are. And what are the most productive regions and, the seasonality of those to make sure that we've got a really good picture of, what is coming and what does it look like in months to come. So we're making sure that we've got the evidence around what is that and what does it look like. And as I said, working with the industry minister, working with the fertiliser industry to make sure. And we're looking also talking to trading partners about alternative sources of our fertilisers too.
Julie, on a role such as yours, you're required to take care of a large department and multiple industries. It's very diverse. Mm. Those of us in key roles often have to have a vision for what we're managing. What would be your vision for Australian agriculture over the next 5 years?
Well, I certainly want to see Australian agriculture thrive and grow. And, it's been terrific to work with industry, with the $100 billion ambition that, we've reached 4 years early. And I think that was with all of us working together. So I think having a joint vision with industry is really important and working with industry. And I know that industry is currently working now that we've cracked the $100 billion. What's next and what does it look like? And at the time when they set that figure, that was hugely ambitious. So I think it's a credit to everybody that we've actually been able to achieve that. And that only happens, with everybody working together and heading in the same direction. And I think it's better for us to have a joint vision for where we want agriculture to be rather than me to have one of my own. But certainly I want to see it thrive like we all do.
And you've got a great helicopter view of agriculture in your role. You probably see it better than any of us. What are some things agriculture could be doing better across the sector?
I think one of the things that I want to work with the sector to do is to better tell our story about how brilliant our farmers are. I mean, we have some of the most fuel efficient, lowest fertiliser use, lowest water use farmers on the planet, like literally the best in the world. And I don't think we tell that story enough. I don't think we highlight it enough. And about how do we help farmers and the community in a way that, isn't hard for farmers to be able to tell that story more, because we always still want to take them away from their day job, which they're so good at. But also how do we help them, get value for what they're doing and improve that value by selling the story.
No, very complimentary. You could have put in there, they're also some of the most cynical farmers in the world as well over some tough seasons.
Oh, they're realistic. Let's be honest, right? They're realistic about, some of the challenges. And Australia can be a pretty challenging environment to farm in. Some of our natural disasters, I've been around some of the parts in Australia after the flood, the bushfires, I've visited some of the drought-impacted farmers in South Australia and Victoria. It can be pretty tough out there. So I think they're pretty realistic, and they know what might come, which is, I think, why they're so resilient and why they're so, you might use those words, I probably wouldn't, but, they are very good at what they do. They're very innovative. They're very good at pivoting when things don't go the way they anticipate.
Yeah, no, that's very kind. Our sector is very resilient, and we've had a number of challenges over the time. And being a beef producer myself, I can be cheeky. Now, our industry, our fortunes often rise and fall on access to export markets. China's been tricky. It comes and goes. It's often political. What's your current view there, and what are you hearing, Julie, with that market access? Do you see any headwinds there at all, or what's your inside look?
Well, obviously one of the things we did when we first came to office was we, set about repairing some of the international relationships and some of those trade impediments. And we've been pretty successful working with industry, not government alone, working with industry to do that. And I think we've seen now over 250 different market accesses that have either been improved, restored or maintained that were threatened. So we've put a lot of time and energy into that to make sure that we've got more diversification. And I think diversification strategy and the expansion of that has certainly helped Australian producers. So I think having all our eggs in one basket didn't go particularly well for us. So I think the diversification strategy is much better. And, we've now got free trade agreements covering a fair amount of the planet, which is also helping Australian producers and providing them with some certainty. But as you say, there's always peaks and troughs, and there's always things that come along. And certainly with some of our biggest exporters, we've seen some of that in the last export countries. We've seen some of that volatility with some of the geopolitics that's been going on around the globe recently. So, we'll continue to work with our like-minded countries and our free trade agreements and work with those countries and keep those relationships strong, because I think that really matters.
Our sister industry, the lamb industry, has done maybe a better job sometimes than the beef industry. It's got a number of key markets and a much broader, diverse footprint of lamb markets. What do you see from a beef perspective, that from a government aspect, that we can be doing better?
Well, I think it's just all of us making sure that we share the same intelligence, that we're working together on what that diversification strategy is, and, you know, where the opening markets might be. Because as a government, you know, when we're doing those country-to-country discussions and the bilateral meetings, it's always great for us as leaders to be able to have an understanding from industry about what's going on the ground for them. There are sometimes those things don't filter all the way through. So I think by sharing information a bit more about what is happening when we're having those discussions.
Julie, we've got always a biosecurity challenge. So we've got foot and mouth, so lumpy skin won't go away. I think we're stuck with that risk for a period of time. Where does your government see the current risk level? Is there any intelligence there, I guess? It's a big, for our industry in particular, it's always, we're very cautious about this going forward. How do you see that?
Yeah, we keep monitoring it very closely, and we're obviously working with the governments, particularly, you know, the Indonesian government in relation to lumpy skin disease. But, you know, been in Bali recently, and, you know, I'm asking my department, you know, do we need to do anything else? Are our, you know, settings appropriate, getting the best possible advice from the experts? And I'll continue to do that. But importantly, we're also working with other countries in helping them lift where they're at too. So we've certainly, I went to Indonesia, I think it was last year, and, you know, met with their ministers, I think five different ministers across my portfolio, where we had some great discussions and where we're cooperating more and helping them with some of our intelligence and some of our capability, really, in terms of lab testing and in terms of vaccines.
You have a good working relationship with the Indonesian minister,
Yes, we do indeed. Yeah, we do. We, you know, as a government, we've been really, you know, strong in restoring those relationships, as I said earlier. And our Prime Minister, of course, has got a great relationship there too.
Excellent. Now, I guess you have a busy schedule with lobbyists in Canberra and industry bodies, and it can be organisations like ours, but we don't tend to be a political organisation. Cattle Australia, they're a peak representative body that we work closely with at times. What is the engagement like with those industry bodies from your perspective as a minister?
As I said, they've been pretty generous, and you know, we have great engagement with the industry bodies and the peaks and the various growing groups across the country. You know, as you know, there's plenty of them, and we do our best to engage. And I've obviously got a really good team around me too, as I indicated before. So between us, we certainly keep in regular contact, and it's been really good, can I say? And, you know, as I said, people have been very generous.
That's excellent. Meat and Livestock Australia, obviously a levy-funded organisation, pretty important to our sector. What's your role in terms of your oversight of those bodies?
Yeah, so I've met with our Research and Development Corps, I think, three or four occasions since becoming minister, and certainly I engaged with the chair of the RDCs regularly, and we have good chats about the direction of the RDCs. And we've just, of course, had the government research and development, what's CERD, I think it's called, you know, the report on research across government and the investments. And, you know, I've been pretty upfront that I do think there's a bit of room for a bit of reform when it comes to the RDCs and to get better value for everybody. And certainly I want to work with them. They do a great job, and Australia should be really proud of our R&D system, but, you know, everything can always be improved.
Oh, I think that we concur with a lot of our members. They see part of those dollars from a fund gate go to levies, and they do want to see them work well and get great profitability outcomes for the industry. Do you find, Julie, from a, might be a cheeky question, but how do you go lobbying for your sector in a government that, looking from the outside, people might not say has been overly represented in agriculture? Is it tough in the, the cabinet room? Do you have to fight hard for what you need?
Well, I think every minister has to fight hard for every dollar, to be really honest, you know. But certainly I don't have any problems with my colleagues. You know, very fortunate, the Prime Minister, the Finance Minister and the Treasurer all have a really good understanding of how important ag is to our economy. And certainly it's one of the most productive sectors of our economy. So we certainly don't have any issue there in terms of, you know, how important it is to to our food security too, which is why we're also doing the food security strategy. You know, this is important to Australians right across the country in terms of our food supply, but also our close neighbours and the important role that our food plays across the globe.
Excellent. And that's very heartening to hear. Is there any new policies or things that are on the horizon that that you might like to share with us from a beef perspective going forward?
Well, not that I can think of off the top of my head that, you know, is new that you haven't already heard, but clearly, you know, with our food security strategy, working with industry on what is the future vision for industry and for agriculture in Australia more broadly and how do we help achieve that. You know, working on the current challenges around the Middle East obviously is taking up a lot of time and energy, but always thinking ahead about where do we want ag to be in the next 5, 10, 20 years. And, you know, and I've, as I said, I've been pretty public about, you know, we want more value, I think all of us, from our investments, whether they be in ag or whether they be elsewhere in the Australian economy.
You'd get a first look at some interesting innovation, I guess.
I do indeed. Yeah, it's great. And I guess the really big thing here is what is our role as government versus working with industry to get some of that on-farm adoption of some of that great innovation, tech and research that's occurring. And how do we do it in a way that isn't difficult for farmers but makes it part of their everyday business?
Julie, how do you manage the pressure of your role? We always like to dig into the person that we're interviewing. How do you manage? You've got a lot of reading, I imagine, to do, a lot of advisors, a lot of meetings, a lot of things like this. You probably get invited to a lot of, industry organisation events around the country. You've still got to be a contributor to Cabinet. Yeah, how do you manage the pressure and how do you keep yourself sharp?
I think what I'd say, Scott Mullers, is like everybody, I try to maintain a bit of a balance. Some days are harder than others and some days are more frustrating or rewarding than others. But like everybody, I try to eat well, I try to get enough sleep and I try to keep myself fit. Late last year, I started park running, so I've taken up park run on a weekend if I'm home. And certainly one of the other things I like to do to help manage is, like most Australians, I probably watch a bit of trashy TV. I read a lot of novels on planes. And the other thing I tend to do is I bake when I get a little bit stressed because I find it very therapeutic. I get great Australian produce, measure it out, and then at the end you get something delicious to eat. So that's always helpful too.
Excellent. You haven't started smoking beef yet?
No, I haven't, but I do love a good steak, particularly if it's got some hot chips and salad on the side.
Excellent. So what's your best beef eating experience that you've ever had?
Yeah, this is hard to think about. I've had so many. I've been very fortunate and I come from a state that has great beef. You know, I'm very proud of our Tassie produce and our Australian produce, so it'll be hard to pick, but there is a great restaurant in Hobart Landscape and they do some remarkable steak, and I do recall eating a very delicious steak there, and it was an event actually being hosted by, I think, the Japanese ambassador at the time, and it was pretty terrific Australian beef.
That's fantastic. That's great. Young people getting in the industry, any tips for young people that might be interested in ag politics or policy or that side of the agriculture industry? What would you say to a young person that's finishing an ag degree that's got an interest in ag politics? Would you have any suggestions for them?
Well, obviously I'd say to them, absolutely have a go. There's a lot of opportunity and a lot of jobs, and what you think is traditional ag is much, much broader than that, and there's a lot of opportunities for you. So give everything a go. The other bit of advice that I got earlier in my life is the train only stops once at the station, so you've got to get on. So every time there's an opportunity, jump right in.
That's excellent. That's a great one to tuck away there. In your role, you'd see a few interesting moments, I guess, in the Parliament. Any funny moments that you'd like to share from your perspective?
There's always funny moments in this place, you know, and a lot of people seem to think that, you know, we're all up here sitting back in question time arguing, but the vast reality of the time is most of the time 90% of the stuff we agree on and we work together on getting outcomes. Anything that's seriously in the national interest, you know, whether it be a biosecurity issue, for instance, you know, you obviously get a lot of politicians, I want to say bipartisan, tripartisan, whatever it is now, we've got so many parties in the parliament, but, you know, across the parliament, People really want to work together when it's in the national interests. And what you tend to see is, you know, the 10% of the conflict. Mm. But it's also good to have conflict because it means it's testing each other's ideas, which is also a good thing. It just unfortunately makes us look like we're arguing all the time and that we're not particularly mature, but that's not what it's about at all. It's actually about, you know, testing ideas and making sure that, you know, decisions that are being made in the national interest.
Excellent. In terms of your own personal values, what would be three that you bring into your role here that you try to live out in your ministerial world, Julie?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'll go back to the advice from my grandma when I was little, where she said, always do your very best in everything and that way you'll be able to sleep well at night. And that's what I do all the time. I give everything my best shot. I try to be optimistic every single day, even when things become frustrating, and I try to get good sleep to make sure that I'm ready for the next day and the challenges that are ahead. But, you know, some days are tougher than others, and, you know, I had a tough early childhood, but I'm very fortunate now in my life, and I want every Australian to be able to have the opportunities that I've had, and that's what I'm working hard for.
That's a great attitude. That's and it's great to see the blessings that we've had. Two questions to finish, Julie, because we know you've got an engagement to get to. Do you still enjoy being the minister, the federal minister for agriculture?
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Excellent. And we always have a catch-all. You're looking outside the Angus industry. Any message for our members? We've got 4,000 members around Australia and New Zealand. What would you like to say to the Angus community before we finish up?
What I'd like to say is our government is listening. We're hearing you, and we're going to keep fighting for better outcomes for Australians, every Australian, including those that are breeding our Angus cattle.
Good on you, Julie. It's been a delight to meet you today and to for you to be able to share some of your very valuable time with the Angus community. So we really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Angus Table. We look forward to bringing you more conversations that support your success in the Angus breed and your farming operation. I'm Scott Wright, CEO of Angus Australia, and today's Angus Table podcast is produced by Mel Strasberg. Until next time, all the best.